So today at SIGINT we are going to talk about the NIMWARs that happened in the last year. First, a few words about myself. My name is Tante. You can reach me on Twitter at Tante. You can go to my blog, thegaybar.com, where I'll also upload the slides. The slides are on github.com/tante/sigint2012. My day job is I'm a scientist at the University of Oldenburg, but that's not really why I am here. This is basically private fun. I also love monkeys, so do with that whatever you want to do with that. NIMWARs. Who here knows about the term NIMWARs? Okay, so I have a few slides prepared to explain what exactly that is. NIMWARs is a hashtag that was used a lot on Twitter and that that kind of summarized a discussion that was going on in the last year when Google opened their social network called Google Plus. It aggregates many different perspectives and many different discussions, basically. So first I'll try to outline what really happened and then try to separate the discussions from each other to see what was really going on. So let's look at the history, but this is not a long history thingy, so it's not gonna hurt, it's gonna be quick. We're going to look at the Google Plus drama. Google Plus launched in 2011, in June. Basically, it was not really forced down on people by Google, but if you have a Google account, you almost instantly got a Google Plus account. And Google Plus enforced a rather strict real name policy. So if your name on Google Plus was CyberKiller007, Google would say, dude, that's not your real name. Fix that or we're gonna ban you. Fake name accounts were then locked, which was, I mean, if it's just another social network account, it's not really a big deal, but it locked people out of their important accounts. Those were, for example, email accounts that were getting locked. Those were, yes?
Correction. There was one popular issue where somebody actually got kicked out of his account, but it was because he uploaded a lot of pictures that also included his underage daughter. It's getting declared poses, and yeah, I think he got his account locked over that part. And most other people just got disabled out of Google Plus. Or if you happen to have a Google Apps account, then you're welcome to do it.
Yeah, and especially if you have a business and if you use Google Apps for your business, that was a big deal. So it had many, let's call them, side effects that were really not intentional. I mean, it's not, many people were not just locked out of that system. Yeah, and for me personally, it was sort of annoying because I couldn't find my friends because in Google they all had these weird names that nobody could relate to anyways, and how was I supposed to know how their parents decided to call them? I mean, that's stupid. So this whole situation sparked sort of a big discussion. It was a big fight on Twitter. It was a big fight, obviously, on Google Plus, where people talked to Google employees about that. And to the outside observer, that might have looked weird. I mean, yeah, it's a new free service and you don't like the naming policy. What's the fucking deal? The discussions on the internet have a sort of a problem that they look sort of hysterical from the outside. So if you're not really involved in the discussion, it's hard to explain why people are fighting about that sort of thing. I mean, yes, you get something for free. If you don't like the rules, don't use it. For people really fighting about it, it was made like this was Google's design decision was about free speech. It was about censorship. Then you always have this right to an anonymity that is in Germany especially a very strong case where many of the people working in privacy basically demand that you should be able to use every service anonymously if you want to. But still, it kind of smells first world problem-y. So let's look at what really happened. Before we really look at the details, this wasn't new. Facebook hated fake names before it was cool. So it's really just a similar discussion happened before. I don't know why it didn't spark this anger and all this fighting on Twitter that Google Plus did. Maybe because people believed Google was still one of the good guys, because people had more hopes for Google and Facebook is evil anyways, I don't know. But Facebook just got this sort of flag they always get for basically anything they do. And Google got a lot more discussion about that. I used a few words now that I think we should look at first before we decide to continue. I used things like real name, pseudonym, and all those things. Let's first look at what a name is. And a name is a sort of unique identifier for entities and objects aimed at being pronounceable and memorable by humans, or human beings, however you want to call it. And I marked the important parts. It's sort of unique. For some people it is. My name, my real name, my legal name, Jürgen Geuter, is rather unique. I think there's no other person with my name, but for example, a friend of mine is called Andreas Meyer, which in Germany is basically a dime a dozen. I mean, you have, everybody knows probably two or three with that name. We name entities and objects, we name people, we name animals, we name, sometimes we name things, places, all sorts of different things. And one of the most important things about names is that we try to keep them pronounceable and memorable. We want to be able to memorize them because the name allows us to talk about things that are not in the room, that I can't point at. I mean, right now I could talk about any one of you and just point at you and everybody would know who I was talking about. But if you leave the room, I need something to refer to you, and that's what we need names for. And names work in real life. Names, even though they have problems, even though they are not really truly unique, from a database perspective maybe, they work. And especially the pronounceable and memorable part works. We could easily generate a UID for every human being and we wouldn't have those clashes, but we just can't memorize those. So names serve a really important, they do a really important thing for human communication, because they allow us to talk about things, and we love talking about things. I mean, talking about things is basically the only language that people have. When we talk about namings, there are different options that we can have. We can just not name things, and then they're called anonymous. Anonymous means they don't have any sort of name, no name at all. If things have a name, they're called onymous. That means there is just some sort of name tag attached to it. And if that name that is attached to a being, a place, whatever, usually a being, mostly a person, if that name is a fictitious name, if it's something that that person came up with, we call it a pseudonym. Then that thing or that person is pseudonymous. What we see here, and that is really an important thing, is that as soon as you take a name, you can, by definition, no longer be anonymous. Any name you give makes you, by definition, one of the lower two things. You're either, you just pick a name and nobody knows whether it's your legal name or not, or you pick something that is obviously a pseudonym. Tante is obviously not my legal name. I'm working on that, but right now it's not. Now we know what name is, and now we know what options we have when it comes to names. So let's look at another word that I used beforehand, the real name. And when talking about Google Plus or Facebook, people always say that those services force you to use your real name. And what does this real name thing mean? It's getting thrown around a lot, but what does it really contain? I mean, it's basically the legal name mystified. We all have a legal name that is recorded in some government database or on a sheet of paper, and usually you have an ID card that says that is your name. And this real name, in Germany there was a term that is really old that's called the wahre Name, or the true name. That is a really old concept, that everything has its true name. And in medieval ages, people believed that if you knew some objects or some person's real name, you could cast magic on it. And if you didn't know that name, you could not cast magic on it. And sometimes it feels like we see the real name still in that sort of fashion, like we believe it has some special property, and it is just a pointer. It is just a pointer at some sort of person or object. It has nothing that makes it special in any way. And for many people, yesterday I talked to someone about this, and he said, yeah, my Twitter handle is unique by definition, because Twitter doesn't allow two people to have the same name. My legal name isn't. So in a certain way, the legal name is even less of an identifier than something that people come up with is. Yeah, we still see that the legal name has sort of magical powers when we make contracts. Because if I sign a contract, I write my legal name on that sheet of paper, and magically that makes it something special. Magically something is now mine, or magically I have to pay some money now, or that sort of thing. Even if nobody can read my name, and if you know my handwriting, not even I can really read it. So it doesn't make any sense that we mystify that name. So I try not to use a real name from now on, because I think it's really a wrong term, and a term that hints at something that shouldn't be there anymore. I try to use legal name. Sometimes real name might slip in, then you just scream to show me that I was wrong so I can fix it. Okay. Why do we care for legal names? That's the question now. I mean, the discussion obviously sparked when some service decided to force people to use their legal names. Why is it important? Now let's look at a few of the arguments that people have brought to the discussion for using and enforcing legal names in this sort of discussion. This comic was made by Penny Arcade in 2004, which is ancient in internet time. It's the internet fuckwad theory. So if you take a responsible and nice human being, probably an adult even, and you add anonymity and an audience, you get basically Halo 4 multiplayer or something like that. It's everybody just throws around insults, everybody's just behaving like there was no consequence to anything. And that is often an argument that people use to give reason for them wanting some sort of real name or legal name identification. It is based on the misunderstanding that not using your legal name makes you anonymous, which we already talked about. It's not, it just makes you pseudonymous. And it also believes that people who are not using their legal name, or their real name as people call it then, they will not be able but usually don't behave in the way that we want people to behave. Obviously, you can always find places where that is true. As I said, go to 4chan. There you have that, and it's not a pleasant place to be. Some people like it, I don't. Halo multiplayer or whatever game you want to play, everything where there's guns and shooting, it's usually the multiplayer is not a pleasant place to be. On the other hand, we obviously do have things like random acts of kindness, where people, without getting any sort of attribution, completely anonymous, just do nice things for each other. It's not that simple, but that is a common perspective on anonymity, that people will not behave ethically in that sort of context. Another thing that made Google choose that route is because they basically want to be your identity provider in the future, and the market for identity providers is really a big deal, and it's developing into more of a big deal all the time. You can log in with your Google account, log in with your Facebook account, authenticate with Twitter, all that sort of thing. Every big company tries to become your true online identity, because if they provide your online identity, they have a lot of power about you. They can decide which service has any sort of chance or not. I don't know if you know this Draw Something game that was going around a few weeks or month ago. If that didn't have this close Facebook authentication, where everything is just tied to Facebook, your friends are already there, everything works, I don't know if the game would have taken off as much as it did. But in this case, maybe you can see why this sort of identification provider role is very important to obviously also Google and Facebook and others. This Google support quote kind of outlines it. They just don't say that they see it as the market of the future or anything. They obviously sugarcoat it a little bit and tell you that they just want to make sure that you are talking exactly to the person you want to talk to. And they assume that obviously if you talk to someone, you know them by their legal name, because who would not? I mean, I don't know. Usually most of the people I talk to through the day, I don't know the legal name of. But what do I know? On the other hand, now that we've looked at the pro arguments, and I've looked at many people arguing in this case, those are basically the only two real arguments I could find. One is, we want to guarantee that you know who you are talking to, and the other is, if we don't force you to use your legal name, you will behave like an asshat. And okay, those are the two pro arguments. Now let's look at the contra arguments. Why do those policies fail? One is that validating names is really hard. It doesn't sound hard, especially if you just look at your own very tight-knit community. If you just look at Germany, in Germany every person has a first name and a last name. Maybe they have a middle name. Some people even have two middle names or a funky last name. But basically, that sort of structure is given. In other cultures, you have different naming schemes. The Eastern scheme is that the family name is put first and then the name. In Russia, which I didn't know before I prepared this talk, you have a different scheme where you have your first name, your given name, and then you have something that shows the paternal line of your family, and then you have your family name. That is the full Russian name, as it's called. And there are many more naming schemes all over the world. Different cultures use names differently and construct names differently, but programmers usually from some Western or Western influenced culture just assume, yeah, we have to put people in there, so we have names, yes, first name, last name, done. And that often fails, and that locks people out of that system because they can't properly put their name in there, for example. You have people on Google Plus, a person that was very vocal about the discussion is called Sai. He has also talked at the last or second to last Congress. And his legal name is Sai, just S-A-I. He couldn't enter that into Google Plus because Google expects you to have a last name. If you don't have a last name, you cannot be part of that. That assumption is built into the whole code of that. It just shows how assumptions we put into code sometimes have nasty consequences. And who's to say whether if I put in my name is Peter Peterson, whether that is a real name? It might look like one, but it's really not a guarantee that it is. The assumptions built into that led to many false positives. There was really a lot of work for Google to filter through all these. People had to send and scan their ID cards and send them in. That was really a huge fuck up, basically. Google dropped the ball there. Then there's a problem, names lack uniqueness. We already talked about that, and this is a rather famous problem. This dude is called Justin John Bieber. And there's a young guy from Canada who, let's call it, sings. And his name is Justin Bieber as well. And people believe that, yeah, he's just pretending to be that old dude, so not all his fans are gonna contact him. People contacted him. And he's really not that nice of a person. He was really pissed off. If you look at Justin John Bieber, you can see more of his comments to fans that wanted to friend him. He was pissed, as in pissed on an enterprise level. Many people share the same name, and especially if you have a name that is very common in a certain area. In the village I was born in, basically everybody's last name was either Stammermann or Meyer. Everybody was called like that. And then you have the default five names for boys and girls: Christian, Andreas, don't know, whatever. And people started working around that. And even in before internet times, you created nicknames so you could separate people. And then they had this weird nickname, and everybody called them with a nickname because it was less prone to cause any sort of confusion. And people in the internet have worked around that. I mean, especially you have people start using their Twitter handle because they can guarantee that it is unique. And I address many people by their Twitter handle, actually. And many people address me by my Twitter handle. So that that tactic that people have come up with to work around the problem of non-unique names and that cause confusion is destroyed by forcing people to put in their non-unique name as an identifier, which is, again, stupid. Also, I think names don't mean something in this magical meaning that we have talked about, but obviously it's part of your identity. People see you. The first thing many people see about you is your name. Maybe it's your tweet and your name next to it, but that's what people see of you. And it should be allowed for you to choose how your identity looks like, and you should be able to develop it in any way you want, as long as you don't step on anybody's toes. I mean, there are a few quotes that can show. There's this online nobody knows that you're a dog, and I think it should. If a dog is smart enough to use the internet, I think it's fine that it should get a Google Plus account if all its dog friends are on Google Plus. I mean, there's the big deal. And pseudonyms and those nicknames are chosen, and I think it says something about a person, and I think it is a level of freedom that we should give people. Why shouldn't people be allowed to choose their name? Actually, in Brazil, there's a really cool law that allows you to change your name free of cost at 18 if the name is weird. So people started giving their kids really weird names, and as a birthday gift to their 18th birthday, they could choose their name because it was free then. That was, I think that's a really smart way to handle that, actually. Not because of, yes, I want to discard my previous life or that sort of thing, but when a kid is born and you have this little smaller than me thingy in your hands, how are you supposed to know how that girl or guy wants to be called in the future? I mean, my parents didn't call me Tante because they didn't know that that is my name. I mean, how could they? So I think that's also a big problem. Telling people, yes, you have to use this weird legal thingy that you had no choice in is wrong. But that sounds like I'm firmly on one position of this discussion, and I'm not. I think it's sort of complicated. It's not that simple. In the end, it's about attribution and reputation to me. If we talk about things, the question really is, can we attribute it to some sort of entity, whether it's identified by its real name, by its legal name, by its Twitter handle, whatever, can we attribute it to some sort of entity, or can we not? And if we can't, is that a problem? Do we need to know who said something? I believe we do. I believe we have to know who said something if the discussion matters. If it's about nothing, if I just want to talk about whether I farted, nobody cares. Yes, I can talk about me farting anonymously, it doesn't matter. But as soon as I start talking about things that might influence the public sphere, as soon as I might want to talk politics, as soon as I might want to change people's behavior, want to influence them, I think we need attribution. And I don't mean we need attribution to the legal name. I think we just need to know who we are talking to. And if MS Pro writes something, I know it's MS Pro. And I can it's this guy in front of here. Or it could be Jetzt. I mean, it doesn't matter who does it. It's just people, I know who said it, and that allows me to have a different perspective on it. Because arguments really don't speak for themselves, and that sounds weird. Many people think, yeah, but obviously a good argument just stand on its own, and it's just beautiful and perfect, and it's this ideal thing that everybody will understand and all that sort of thing. It's not. Let's look at an example. This is my statement. We want to maximize freedom. And probably everybody's gonna say, yeah, that is a great idea, awesome. What?
Maybe it's by Hitler.
Maybe. It's really, the question really is, it makes a big difference who says that. If, yeah, in Germany we have this teeny tiny party that's slowly dying away called the FDP, good riddance. And if they say we want to give freedom to the people, they mean they want to give you the freedom to die of curable diseases. That is their perspective on freedom. Well, they don't want to see you die, but if you can't pay for your doctor, who cares? Other people might say, yes, to me freedom means that every person can choose their own destiny, can make good decisions, can live the life they want to live. And for many people, for example, for me, this sentence would include making the unconditional basic income reality, because I believe only that makes people free to decide. But as you see, it makes a big difference whoever says that. And if I don't attribute that statement to anyone, you really can't say anything about it. It's really hard to see whether you support that statement or not. And obviously, that is a statement where I can show the extremes to which these differences can go. But it's really important to know, what did a person say beforehand? Or maybe what is the situation of that person? If a person says, yes, we have a... If I say, yeah, I don't see any problem with discrimination in Germany, yes, because nobody can discriminate me. I'm a white male in Germany. Who's going to discriminate me with anything? But if somebody who might be the target or the victim of discrimination says something that has obviously a whole different impact, and the argument should be seen differently. So if we're talking about something that really has impact for the way we live together, I think we need some sort of attribution. It's really about this concept of media literacy. And media literacy in German, Medienkompetenz, is a weird word, because usually the word is only used to say that other people don't have it. Nobody ever says, oh, that guy is very media literate. Nobody says that. You always say, yeah, nobody is really media literate, and we have to teach the kids, teach the teachers, and teach everybody to become more of that. But it really captures what we want to do. Media literacy means that you're able to not only acquire all sorts of information, but that it allows you to filter and process that information, that it allows you to use that information to make good decisions, good rational decisions usually, most of the time. And to give people the means to really use their rational, their brilliant rational minds, you have to give them something to attach to. And the argument itself really doesn't do that sort of thing. You need to be able to see where something comes from. And even if it's just about seeing whether that guy is a lobbyist for something. I mean, it's not a bad thing to be a lobbyist for many things, but you need to make that transparent. If you are a lobbyist for solar power, and if you say, yes, we need to put solar panels on every roof in Germany, it is a different argument if everybody knows that that is your job to say that, and that you make your money off that. Or if you just say it because you think it's right. It's a different sort of argument. And if you don't give that sort of information, that sort of attribution, I think it's really dishonest in a certain way. And anonymity destroys people's ability to use their skills, their rational minds. So I don't believe that anonymity has really a place in this discussion. But when I say I want people to be able to attribute something to a person, we should never forget that people are not this one monolithic thing. People are really more like diamonds. They have very different facets. I'm a different person here than maybe I'm at my job, maybe with my friends, with my girlfriend. I'm always a different person. And we should allow people maybe to have more than one identity for different things. I mean, if I am Mr. Goiter teaching at university, I'm obviously talking in a different way and maybe saying things that I would not say here, and vice versa. So I think it's okay to have more than one public identity. I think it's okay to have more than one name that gets thrown around. You just have to be able to take any sort of public statement and put it into context. And context is really what makes a statement good or bad, and makes it useful to you or makes it contradictory to you. And that sort of context is what I think we really need. We just have to understand that people are not that simple. They are not this, what many people believe, they are their legal name. They are whatever is on their ID card. I don't think that it was ever true, but it is far less true nowadays, where we have so many different roles all through the day. So let's come to the wrap up. Let's look at what we learned today. I hope we did. Anonymity has its place. it has its place if you don't want to influence the public. I mean, and obviously there's, for example, whistleblowing, there are people trying to, where attaching their identity to something is a problem, yes, and they can put it out there anonymously, obviously. But somebody then has to check the facts, has to see, okay, is that true? What can we learn from it? How does it fit into the social context? Somebody has to pick it up and attribute it to themselves and allow people to extend the trust they have to that person, to that argument. If you just go to some paste bin and you see something written there, that is nothing you can really work with. You can use that to research it, can see if it's really something that is a problem. Then you can say, yes, I researched this and it is true. And now people can say, okay, that person that did the research, I trust them. They do good work, they are smart, so I trust that argument or I trust that description. But if it's just some sort of paste bin, I think making any sort of important decisions based on that is not very smart. I wouldn't advise you to do that. Important, the real name in any system is always...
the real name.
I quoted my own slide. Real names are stupid, and enforcing people to use their real name is stupid because actually real names are silly. My real name has umlauts in it. It's really unusable for most cases. I couldn't even use it as a Twitter handle. That is retarded. You should be allowed to change your name if it doesn't fit anymore. Maybe at some point in the future I'm going to decide I'm no longer Tante. Might be. Then I'm going to change it, and it's fine, because you can always say, yeah, that guy used to call himself Tante, now he doesn't anymore, because, don't know. I changed my Twitter avatar recently because people associated me with some weird party. I changed my avatar, now things are fine, and still people can see, yes, the old avatar was that monkey with the pirate thingy, and I was just a monkey. So I think that we just should get rid of this. I mean, we never have to get rid of the name our parents gave us. Maybe they have a lot, maybe it has a lot of meaning to them. Maybe they like calling us by that name, but we shouldn't force anyone to use. I mean, we wouldn't force people to use the naked baby pictures the parents took to put in their ID. And that is basically the same thing. The weird name that your parents chose for you is put all over the place. I think that is wrong. So if you build a service, never enforce a real name. If it's important, you might force people to have some sort of attribution, but tying it to a real name is really not the right thing. And I think that anonymity in public discussions really has no place if you're honest and if you want to give people the ability to really have a meaningful discussions, that anonymity has to go. Pseudonyms are fine. Anonymity has to go. And I think there is some room left for discussion, so I left some extra time for that. But first, thank you for listening. Questions, insults, anyone? Do we have a second one of those thingies, or should I just give it to him?
I want to make a case for anonymity because I spend a lot of time in these places on the internet, and yes, you can have meaningful discussion even without names. It can be even more meaningful because you don't. Sometimes it's nice to not know the context of the speaker, or sometimes you get people who write in a very experimental style and even discuss with themselves, and it's fun to read. And you can compare forums and image boards, and when you venture aside from the random boards and sometimes visit topic boards, these can be very interesting, and yeah, you can have meaningful discussion even without names.
Yeah, you can, obviously you can have meaningful discussions. I know people that really have meaningful discussions on 4chan, and 4chan has given us a lot. It has given us cat pictures. I mean, and who would ever criticize cat pictures? But would you really want to lead a political discussion on 4chan? Good luck, really. I think that whenever I look at 4chan or any of those sorts of things, you obviously you have smart people there, and even you have sometimes a smart statement in there, dug deep in all the filth and stupidness. I mean, not everything there is stupid, but if you really want to discuss something, I think that's really the wrong setting for it. It's not that it doesn't make sense to, for example, you have this weird idea and you're not sure whether there's really something to it or not, and you just throw it in 4chan and see how people react. That's fine. But then you take the idea, you make a real argument, you make a real statement, and put it out there in a different way if you really want to start a serious discussion. I mean, nobody says, yeah, I threw something on 4chan, go through there and you're gonna love it. I mean, that's I don't think that is how that sort of discussion is going to work.
Anonymous discussion is not just image boards. There's this thing called structured dialogic design. It's one of your few techniques to have anonymous discussions among experts. That's used by futurists. And you have these expert meetings where people gather together, have an introductory discussion, collect their opinions, but don't assign these. And then in the next round, you just submit these comments without any attribution and discuss these again until you've found a consent. And that's another use.
I think that might work in this sort of very academical and very, yes, we can. It would probably work in mathematics as well, because there's this ideal mathematical layer put on top of the real world or the meat space where everything is fine, everything is cleanly defined, and things just work, or they are a contradiction. But as soon as you start really talking about this messy place out there, I think that falls flat. You said yes, and they come to a consensus, and then they just publish that consensus. When have you seen the last consensus in a political discussion? I mean, a real consensus that was not just, yeah, we have 50 guys, we have 30 guys, our consensus is obviously the consensus, and we're going to do that. I think that that falls flat as soon as you really start to talk about things where people have serious opinions that you just cannot disprove. I mean, I cannot disprove that the statement the FDP makes about freedom is wrong. I just think that it's basically sociopathic, but I could never prove that their opinion is wrong. I mean, it's not a contradiction. It's based on their premises, their axioms, and they build that sort of theory. So they put their theory there, I put mine here, and we will never reach any sort of consensus. We cannot, because our axioms are completely different. And then we couldn't agree on axioms to base our theory on, so we've lost. And then we have this deadlock where we can no longer talk and find any sort of solution. And I think as soon as you start attaching your name and you don't have to rely on this, yes, we will come to a consensus and it's gonna be the ideal and this pretty thing that nobody can criticize anymore, only then can you really reach any sort of solution for problems that affect the real world. I don't see real world problems being discussed in this, yes, we're just gonna resolve the logical issues and then we're gonna see who has the contradiction and who hasn't. That's not how the real world works. The real world is just a lot more complex than logic. That is sometimes that's frustrating, but it's sadly true.
Yeah, you should know that.
Sorry, what is your name?
We can discuss this afterwards.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Anyone else? I've still got this loudspeaky thingy.
Yeah. First of all, I think you have a microphone up there which should work, so you don't have to.
Boo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
So another.
You're
another
a lot smarter than I am.
Thank you very much. I don't think so, but okay. Another preface here. First of all, I agree with everything you say, and second, the comment I made.
That makes you very smart and attractive.
I'm free at 7 o'clock. Should we meet somewhere? Okay, so I think I know what you're going to answer to what I have to say now. The thing is, for the first time ever, as far as I know, we have a political party which don't really give a shit about real names as well. Pirate party here. And what annoys some of them, at least, and what annoys me quite a lot, and I know the problem here, is that I hear comments from some of them with their pseudonyms, and then I have to vote for them with their legal names. And I know the problem here. I know, of course, that it should be on the voting ballot. There should be, instead of their legal name, there should be their pseudonym. Unfortunately, there isn't. Yeah. So from my point of view, it annoys me that they don't use their legal name. And I know that's wrong, but that's what, yeah, that's my result, my own thought in this point.
I mean, they could just provide a cheat sheet where they say, okay, Cyberkiller 001 is really Peter Klaus or whatever. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, this is really annoying. I just hate sitting. I'm sorry.
Again, smart people. I love this. Thank you. I agree completely. Yes, it does make sense to have two different naming schemes in one system. That is stupid. And we should, especially if you have a voting situation in one party where you can just define the system where, however it's supposed to work, I think it's really stupid. Again, real name is stupid. And it is stupid in the Pirate Party as well. And obviously it is stupid because they also talk to each other with their Twitter handles. And I think, in fact, many people really have this problem where they now have the sheet of weird names in front of them and they can't really see who that is. That is obviously a problem, yes. It is also a problem when you have to deal with the state in this real official capacity. If you want to be elected in the real voting system, that is also, I think it's weird that there's no, okay, this is just put the name people call you in here. I don't see why that is a problem. Obviously they are afraid somebody's gonna put penis jokes in there or whatever, but who cares? I mean, it's a dick joke, yeah. Anyone else?
Yeah, I'm just wondering whether you raised the issue of, well, if you're saying that in political discussion we shouldn't stay anonymous, then you're not raising the issue of the political potential of anonymity, where people are dependent on anonymity because otherwise they might be prosecuted. And I think that political discussions where people are anonymous and hence dare to say things, that is also important data for that we have to consider it when or consider when we talk about political discussions and anonymity.
Obviously, I mean you can give any sort of anonymous information. It's pretty. It's like a little flower I talk into. Yes, you're right. I mean, there are obviously many situations where, for example, a whistleblower cannot reveal his or her identity or whatever. A person just doesn't want to. I mean, it's their freedom not to. But if you really want to make a decision and you start gathering your arguments and you have this weird argument that might be a big deal, but you can't check it because you can't ask the person, you can't specify, you have to research that. And if you start researching and say, yes, I researched this, other people can also use that argument because they trust you. But the argument itself, yeah, somebody wrote that on Pastebin, somebody put it anonymously into Wikipedia, that is not really something that you can base a discussion on, I think. Not if you need facts and if you need hard arguments.
But if a lot of people write it?
Yeah, how many anonymous paste bins can you open in a minute? I mean, you're obviously the programming expert here, so yes, you can do that in seconds. And yes, you can create this. If it's anonymous, you can create boatloads of that information that can be true or false. The problem is that you cannot say what it is. And if you have you need some sort of anchor where you are able to decide for you, for your situation, whether you believe that or whether you don't believe that. And if you don't give people that option, most people will discard that opinion because they have no way to see whether there's something to it or not. Or they have to invest the time. And if you make it hard to have your argument heard, that is probably not a good idea. So, I mean, that is why so many people give their anonymous things that they really can't publish to a journalist, because that journalist can say, yes, I have my anonymous sources, but I did research, I checked facts, and I published this under my name with my reputation attached to it, and now it's an argument, and now it's something people can relate to, can point at, and can see, yes, I trust that guy, that girl, to check the facts. I think the anonymous argument itself can just be the start of somebody else giving that argument some sort of credibility by attaching their name to it and their reputation.
I understand that. I still think that not only the person that expresses argument is an important attribute, but also the amount of people expressing their opinion.
That is obviously true. The problem is, if it's anonymous, you don't know if it's just one person or a billion. So that is, again, it's a problem with the fact-checking, really. It's if you could guarantee a system, and I don't believe it's really possible, a system where you can comment or write something anonymously, but you can guarantee that you know that two people or two accounts are not the same, then that might be a thing. But if you want to be able to guarantee that two accounts are not the same, then you have to attach it somewhere to a person, basically, and then the anonymity thingy is gone. Because somewhere you have that sort of information, and somebody's going to crack it, and somebody's going to say, yeah, that is Fiona, by the way. And so I think then we've lost again. There's a question back in the thingy. Congress feeling, woo!
Just a brief remark, but in the beginning you said that we attribute a certain mystical power to our real name or our legal name. Right now we sign something. But isn't that also slightly circular if you talk now about this need to attribute some kind of identifier to someone? Because you stated, and I think I totally agree, it doesn't really matter what this identifier is. If it is a legal name, or if it is a Twitter handle, or whatever, you just need some sort of identifying. And for many years, this sort of identifier was your legal name. That's why we sign stuff with it. And don't you think that's why we do this? We try to... I think we are slightly dependent on putting information into context.
Obviously.
I certainly have the need to ID things, because otherwise the context is lagging. And we are pretty prejudiced as humans, right? If you don't know where the source is coming from, you can't put it into context, you're confused. I think that's your explanation for this mystical power of legal names and signing things.
I mean, obviously you're right. I mean, as I said, the legal name just it works to a certain degree. I just wanted to show a little bit of the history of this thing, because as I said, back in the days where people really believed if somebody knew your real name, they could cast magic on you. Many people had this public name they used, sort of a nickname that was just something they made up, just so nobody could curse them, because that was a big deal back then. People would curse you, and your milk would get bad and get spoiled and that sort of thing. I have that note there, this Rumpelstiltskin fairy tale, where as soon as somebody knew his real name, his whole plan was screwed. He was screwed, basically. That kind of illustrates that perspective. And I think it's still sort of in this lizard part of our brain. It's sort of hardwired back in there, this official real name has some sort of importance. And I mean, basically, it's nowadays in Germany, it's really stupid that the state still looks at this legal name, because they give everyone a tax number. So everybody has a unique identifier. So we can get rid of this legal name altogether, because it doesn't make any sense anymore. But it's just one of those cultural leftovers that at some point we'll just have to get rid of, I guess. Well, we don't have to, but I think we will.
Just for double checking, so that you can be sure that the number is not misspelled.
True. I mean, as I said, those names, a name is just easier to handle, obviously. I mean, I can't even remember my bank account details, and that's shorter than my tax number, so... Anything? No. Then again, I thank you for being here and for listening to me. Thank you.